Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the second iteration, if you will, of the U.S. CDI Task Force. Just as a reminder, this task force, while similar in membership, is slightly different in its scope in that this group is charged with providing recommendations in response to ONC's proposed rule for the 21st Century Cures Act. So with that, you'll see some of the familiar players, but we will certainly have a different charge and scope in which the co-chairs will walk us through very shortly. So I'll call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Christina Caraballo.
I'm here.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Here.
Brett Oliver.
I'm here.
Cheryl Turney.
I'm here.
Leonard. Not yet. Ken Kawamoto, I believe, is absent. Clem McDonald?
Here.
Valerie Gray?
Here.
Tina Esposito?
I'm here.
Steve Breedy? Not yet. And Andy Truscott? Okay. With that, I will hand it over to our co-chairs, Christina Caraballo and Terry O'Malley, to kick us off. Christina or Terry?
Okay. Terry, did you want me to go through the agenda and get started?
Sure. Go ahead. I was on mute. Go ahead.
Okay. Totally up to you.
Fire away.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thank you all for joining. Today we are going to just do a quick overview of our membership and then go right into reviewing what is in the new U.S. core data for interoperability, as well as our charges and work plans. So our first charge is going to be to review the U.S. CDI version 1 data elements, and the second will be to look at the draft promotion model. And then we are hoping to go ahead and get into our discussion on the patient demographic elements, which will make more sense as we kind of move through the agenda. So let's go on to the next slide. So this is a snapshot of our membership. We have a lot of the same members from our first one. So welcome back for round two. I know Terry and I and our ONC chair leads, Stacy and Adam, are all really excited to get this back started up again. So you'll notice on our membership this round that we have all high-tech members. With that being said, we do plan on bringing subject matter experts in as needed, and ONC is already working on a list of identified subject matter experts based on the agenda items and our charge. Terry, did you have anything else to add to that?
No, I think that sounds great, other than to really thank you all again for putting your lives on hold to be part of this little episode. So thanks again. Really appreciate it.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get right into it. Move on to the next slide. So just a quick overview. I do know that we had at our larger committee meeting, we had a wonderful overview of all of this, but with how big everything is with the new NPR and our four task forces, we figured it would be good to just recap on some of the slides that ONC has already put together. So as a reminder, ONC is proposing to replace the Common Clinical Dataset definition with the U.S. Core data for interoperability standard. So it is becoming a standard in this proposed rule, and we are looking at version 1 today. So the goal here is to really look at increasing the baseline data to be exchanged commonly to improve interoperability and data exchange. So within the U.S. CDI, as I stated, we have the common clinical data set and then the proposal of a few more data classes. And those include provenance, clinical notes, pediatric vital signs, and address and phone number. And then that the first set that we're looking at is really under our task one to look at the data elements of these four additional data classes. The second part of the USCDI standard is the annual update schedule, which we will be reviewing as part of our task two under the promotion model process. So let's go ahead and move on to the next slide. So our specific charge for phase one is to review these newly specified data elements under the proposed USCDI version one, providing recommendations specifically on the inclusion of data provenance, clinical notes, pediatric vital signs, and then address and phone number under demographics, and then also looking at any missing data elements within the proposed data classes or data classes that are already in existence.
And Christina, if I could add something, we're pretty limited to what these categories are. I mean, we're not adding new categories. That's beyond our scope. We can address these five different things. Of course, missing data elements is a sort of a broad category. But within each of these categories, if we want to add new data elements, they need to be, and I think Steve used the phrase, a logical extension of the elements in that data class. We couldn't suddenly go off and add lab data to provenance. So there has to be some logical connection between what's already in the data class and what we're proposing. But if it's a reasonable fit, then we won't get a lot of pushback. But just kind of keep that in mind. There are sort of limits to how far we can go. That's the end of the editorial comment. Thanks, Christina. Keep on.
No, excellent. Excellent point, Carrie. And that actually leads really well into the next slide. This is just kind of a visual of the previous slides. It's all in one snapshot. If you look at the highlighted or purple, then those are the new data elements that ONC is seeking recommendations for that we're really going to start our focus on at the beginning of this task force. And then the ones in blue are the data classes that are already in existence within the common clinical data set. And to echo Terry, those are ones that we'll look at less. However, one thing we may dive into is looking at some of the data classes already in existence that might need a little more flavor. For example, we have care team members, but no data elements under that. And is that something that, if we have time, we would want to look at some of those others to review? But again, we're going to stay very focused on the highlighted sections as the key part of our charge. So then moving on to the next slide. This is basically a breakdown of what we are looking at under provenance. They're looking at including, and this is a new one, with three proposed data elements, including author, author's timestamp, and author's organization. And ONC is really requesting that we comment on the inclusion of these three and any additional. Moving on to the next slide.
We're going to talk about these at the end.
Yeah, we are. Today we're going to specifically talk about the patient demographics because we thought it would be a good one to start with. And then once we get through this, we'll show you a timeline of when each will be talked about and our kind of plan for gathering information and discussion around them.
could I just raise a confusion? So the USCD 1 thing that's on the web is different than what you presented here. Not much, but it's clearer, and I really think that we shouldn't have two versions floating around.
Clem, I don't know what you're referring to.
There is a USCD 1 representation of something very close to this on the ONC website, and it's not the same. It has a little more detail, and I think we shouldn't be using this one. We should be using the one on the website, which I think is more recent.
Okay, well, we'll take note to follow up on that. I know these were slides that ONC has been using, so my assumption was that they were the most recent, but we can
check. It's a little clearer. It says just a little more.
Okay. And I'm sorry,
hey,
we're just getting back in. I was going to call on Cheryl. Was that what you were going to ask me, Lauren?
Yeah. This is Cheryl. I don't know. I actually had a question about the provenance, because with the identification of those attributes, what I wasn't clear on, and again, I haven't yet found this in the my read of the rule, but are those provenance attributes going to be added for a single reference, or can multiple references be included? I do think when we get to that discussion, it should not only be about the attributes, but also the way the attributes would be used, because that's going to be material in terms of how and whether or not they're sufficient. I don't know if this group agrees with that, but because we're going to be dealing with things that have been dealt with in blockchain and other things as they come forward, which will have multiple stamps for author, timestamp, organization, et cetera. And so I think we need to figure out how we're going to deal with those as well. Otherwise, what we do won't live in the real world.
Yeah, and Charlotte, great points. And what we're going to do when we get on, we're going to show you the kind of the Google Doc structure that's going to be rolled out. So there'll be plenty of opportunity to put your thoughts down on the Google Doc, sort of in perpetuity.
Okay.
So then we can all address them and discuss them and wordsmith them and do all that sort of stuff. So it'll be an ongoing editing process for the next umpteen sessions. But good points. They're great. So you will bring them up. There's no question.
All right. Thank you.
Great.
Yeah,
so just running through this snapshot. Go ahead, Terry.
I was just going to say, these slides are really just a quick overview of sort of where we're heading. And we don't have to dive into them right this moment, but we will. Go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Well, no, that's a great point. And I'm actually going to get through this because it looks like this group is ready to get into discussion. And a lot of this material is repetitive based on the chart. So just pulling it up for reference, this is the data elements, or these are the data elements included in the clinical notes. And again, we will be looking at these data elements and addressing any additional that we think should be added. So moving on to the next slide. Here's just our snapshot of the pediatric vital signs, which is a new data class underneath of the main category of the vital signs, specifically focused on pediatrics. And here's the data elements that are currently being proposed that we are going to review as a task force. So moving on to the next slide, we have the patient demographics, which we are actually going to start to look at today. And same charge as the other data elements we're looking at. So I will go ahead and move on from this one and look at our timeline, I think, is next. So here is our proposed timeline. Today we're going to kick off with a discussion on patient demographics. And I know this is an early discussion, so one of the things that Terry and I were discussing is starting a Google Doc. So today we're hoping to start our conversation on patient demographics, capture some of the dialogue, and then follow up with this group with a Google Doc so that everybody can have extra time to add any more information, guiding text, and anything else that's not captured on today's call for a quick review at the beginning of our next call, which will focus on data provenance. And then we will be moving on to clinical notes and then the pediatric vital signs. We will have kind of a deep timeline looking at our recommendations to be finalized on May 6th for the full HITAC committee to review and present on May 13th. One thing I did want to note is that our timeline for our task one is aligned with the other three task forces going on now. And then we're going to stay laser focused on phase one on our task one. And then after our full HITAC committee meeting, we will be going on to our task two of our charge, which is actually the next slide. So that you guys know what's coming, phase two of the charge will actually be to provide feedback and a review of the USCDI draft promotion model. So ONC is working right now on getting us a nice draft of that, so we're going to be able to really finesse it and provide feedback. We wanted everyone to know that this was coming so that we can once again stay focused on what we have in front of us, which is looking at the proposed data elements. And then this part will be a lot of what we were working on in our last task force on how we get more data elements and data classes into the USCDI and really refining that process. Terry, did you want to add anything here?
Nope. Other than, should we take a break for questions and comments and then continue?
I think that's a great idea, and I see Steven's hand up.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I appreciate the timeline that we're on and the fact that we want to dig into the demographics. But like Cheryl and I think Clem, I have sort of some burning ideas on the top of my head that have come up in my initial review of our charge it sort of feels like we should get them out on the table and then come back to them when we do the deeper dive, just so that we sort of don't lose them. And if so, I'm happy to share them. But if not, I can try to save them for later.
Well, actually, Stephen, that's a great idea, and we were going to share the draft Google Doc, but Katie, I'm wondering if it makes more sense for me to bring it up on my computer, and I can edit it as we talk. Can we do that?
Yes, you can do that.
Okay.
As you know, Terry, that's worked well for us in some other task forces, so I support
that. Yeah, We were bragging on you guys. You and Ken are the masters.
I try to do something similar. All right, so I'm going to, Lord willing, share. All right, wait a second. Share my screen. All right. Tell me if you can see it. Not there yet, huh? It's got the desktop.
It's
that's
spinning.
Nice. Lovely. It's my screensaver. But it doesn't want to show the document. All right.
Here it comes.
Is it?
Here we go.
All right. USCDI data class. Okay.
So Terry, I liked Stephen's idea of collecting just general information before we dive in. So maybe we start a paragraph with bullets at the top.
Yeah, let's go. So Stephen, you're up.
Okay, so just again, this is the things I've jotted down. Under provenance, I think there are some real key things that we're going to want to flesh out, and Cheryl kind of started the list. The idea of multiple timestamps on a piece of data or a document, I think we need to think about, you know, how we're going to manage those. Multiple versions of a piece of data or a document as it may change over time. The idea of reference IDs to connect those multiple versions and keep them together in a bundle. And then Cheryl mentioned digital signatures and blockchain, but this has clearly come up in another task force, the idea of needing to manage a piece of data to assure that it's not been tampered with. All of these things have been suggested as components of provenance beyond the few pieces that ONC described in the draft rule. And I think that provenance itself may have its own sort of glide path that expands over time, starting with a small set and moving forward. So I just think when we get to provenance, those are all ideas that I would toss in there. And maybe I'll just give you my two other thoughts and then let other people chime in. Under clinical, the list of clinical notes, they listed the different notes as data elements, which doesn't make sense to me linguistically. Those are note types. Those of us who've been involved in the whole CCDA patient story project stuff, those are note types. They're not data elements in the way that I think of them. So I just think we might think about that language. And then the last one on my mind is the pediatric vital signs. I think there's a typo in a lot of the ONC materials. We measure head circumference in little kids, not big kids. We measure them in newborns and infants. So a lot of the ONC documentation says children greater than 3 years old, but I think it's supposed to be less than 3 years old. I saw at least one place in ONC documentation where it did say less than 3 years old. But as somebody who takes care of kids and has for decades, I think they got that a typo.
Okay. Good start. Is that your list?
That you'd invite other comments, I'd like to weigh in on the provenance just a little. So there's an activity underway, and I mean, it's out on fire with provenance, and I think there's also one in CCDA, which is more elaborate, thinking should at least be thought about in this whole plan. But I think the biggest thing you need is a unique ID for this data element, that item that's being provenanced. Because the biggest problem is you get the same data from many sources. You know, the hospital sends it to the doctor, he sends it to another doctor, but the hospital also sends it to the doctor. You can't tell which one is the primary original one. And all the things that Steve said, I think, are also true.
Yeah, and Steve, was it Dave McCauley who did a riff on provenance in the...
Yes.
Dave McCauley maybe,
from Cerner.
Yeah, could you somehow forward that to us, and we'll plunk that in there too.
You know, I mean, we captured it in our recommendations. For the orders and results draft recommendations from the ISP task force, and we took it from Dave and then ran it through the group, so it's in there.
But it would still be worth kind of refreshing. Is it just an email? It could be forwarded.
I mean, I can go dig out Dave's email. I think Dave wrote a whole paper on it. Let me touch base with him, and I'll, because he and I had a talk about this at HIMSS just a couple weeks ago.
Terry, this is Tina Esposito. I wanted to not lose something Cheryl had said earlier, and that's really sort of, a little bit more overarching in some respect. I agree with everything that's been said, by the way, but she said something around the lines of ensuring that what we create sort of continues and stays, and I think we mentioned blockchain, and I will be honest, I am not a blockchain expert, but as you think about provenance, that's sort of something that will absolutely align and ensure that we can use newfound technologies to ensure that we have a very clear understanding of who's touched the record, what's been added, et cetera. So I think something along the lines of ensuring that, and I don't know if that's like a crosswalk, cross-reference of some sort of whatever some of these emerging technologies are going to require as data elements, we should do our best knowing what we know today, and clearly we don't know everything sort of and what's coming, but we should do our best to ensure that we are establishing and setting ourselves up appropriately with for emerging technology to be leveraged and incorporating the data elements that are necessary. I would also say that should be true for the patient demographics. If, you know, I know that the intent is to get there today, but when I look at that, and I think it was also mentioned, it's about identifying patients. And so when you think about referential identification using old addresses, using a cell phone or a mobile number, where we, I think guidance from this group would be where we can sort of align ourselves and incorporate those elements for what we know today, we should absolutely do that.
Yeah, good point. Well taken. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest tasks of this group, and that's to be looking into the future enough to know what's coming, but not so much that it gets in our way of getting something, as Clem would say, that works right now. Okay, that's great. And Cheryl, have we captured your thoughts adequately, or should we?
Very well. Captured them very well at this point. Thank you.
Okay. Who else? Anyone else want to weigh in on these sort of big issues that we will circle back to? Or use them as our touch points. You can weigh in any time. All right, this is a living document which can live in any different way. So, is this our sort of our 1 o'clock? Are we at the point of our 1 o'clock break, where we're going to dive into data elements, or do we have other things to go through?
I think we're ready to go ahead into the.
The
patient demographics.
Okay.
Which we can go ahead and leave your slide up or your Google Doc up if you want.
Yeah, let me, so you got a sense of how I hope this is going to work. First of all, this sheet is a draft, all right? We can come up with anything we like, but let me walk you through it, and then we can add stuff that's missing or take stuff out that we don't want. But basically, where do we get? So notes up above. So we're doing demographics, right? So we had a heading for demographics, and there'll be a heading for provenance and PD vital signs, et cetera. And then what's under this are what's currently for demographics in the common clinical data set, which we are replacing. And that ONC, then what we propose in our charge, so they want to throw in address and phone number. All right. And then I thought the third category, so it's what was there, what ONC is proposing, and then what we come up with is sort of the third category. And this is the beginning of the third category. All right, so then we can, again, put these in different places. And then I thought it'd be helpful, at least to me, it was helpful to think about if we're doing demographics, then what's the problem that we're really addressing? Right? So we got demographics. It's not just demographics. It's we're doing something with the demographics that has value to us. And then if that's the case, then why don't we list the things that demographics might intersect with so we can make sure that what we're proposing in this data class actually meets the use cases that we think have high value. So let me stop there. That's just the layout. So any thoughts on layout or things you'd rather see or additions?
Yeah, I like it, Terry. I like the idea of starting with the problem. I think that's a good way to think about it. I mean, to me, this really helps me think about, you know, you say, what you refer to as patient identification, you know, in my mind, I think patient matching is kind of the problem. I mean, yeah, I mean, but it's sort of the same thing. You know, you can just say matching / identification. But clearly, you know, we're all, you know, well aware of the challenges of algorithms and deterministic algorithms and the heuristics that are being done, et cetera. That seems to me critical, you know, and there's actually data out there about, you know, what pieces of demographic information do you need to get what degree of a match. I think that's an area where we may want to have some SMEs come in who've actually been part of that mathematical statistical analysis as opposed to us just kind of intuiting on this.
I think that's an excellent point. I do want to keep patient matching and patient identification separate. In that recent Pew report that came out, there was patient identification where I come in and I'm identified as me as I see my provider. And then there's patient matching where I need to find the record. So I think they are different.
Clarify, patient asking is you want to combine records from different places,
right,
with about the same identifier. You meant that.
Yeah, thank you, Clem. And I see Valerie, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I mean, I guess more a couple of questions than a comment, but I do agree with what folks have, sort of how we're organizing the work and the interest in having an SME on patient matching come in. I guess I even had a more basic question, and I'm sort of embarrassed to ask it, but, you know, when we sort of say address and phone number, do we mean current address, physical address, mailing address? When we say phone number, are we trying to get at mobile or home, or, and how does sort of some of those details and, like, how you code street, is it ST,
yeah,
is it STR, is it ST, do those kinds of questions come into play for the work ahead, or am I being too basic?
No, sure. I think that's...
Yeah.
Go ahead, Clem. You're going to...
Well, I was going to say what you're... I think you're right on.
Yeah. And there's a paper that was just published in AHIMA, and I can put the link up, that goes over that in excruciating detail. You know, so...
Yeah.
You know, current address, old address, you know, street, zip, you name it. So let me get that out to everybody as well, if I can.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
I mean, when you think about it, when you are taken through by, you know, those credit agencies or what have you, or you know, when you have to do your self-identification to get a direct address, that's, you know, they've got all your old addresses. Right. So, I mean,
yeah.
You know, to just say address, you know, it could be a lifetime of addresses with applicable dates, et cetera. There's, you know, same with phone numbers, you know, work, home, cell, girlfriend, et cetera. I mean, it goes on and on.
Yep. So AHIMA they did a nice paper. So I will send the paper, and it's got the appendix to everybody. But Cheryl, you're absolutely right. And the same thing goes for phone numbers, you know, cell, mobile, work. Old, new, whatever. Although, isn't it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the cell phone number one of the more durable pieces of personal data that's coming out?
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's what I've heard as well, and especially now that, you know, it's portable, and it's not like the old days where you had to get a new number every time.
Yeah.
And I don't see email listed here yet.
Well, so that'd be the, so that's interesting. So we'll, so.
Could I toss in more too? If the idea is that the patient should get all their data, why not have a destination, whatever it'll be, a URL, you know, there's a variety of possibilities, even a cell phone number, but where it could be sent, where you could send your data instead of having to go poke around and find it and then wait to see if it's not there yet, you go back again.
How about that? Patient designated destination.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we were I mentioned email, and I don't know, you hesitated, Terry, about it, but I think, you know, obviously email, like phone, one can have multiple, they can change over time, and some of them are going to be pretty durable. And then there's the whole issue of direct addresses and patients, individuals getting their own direct addresses. I think the idea of designated destination to me is like providers' preferred means of communication, you know, in our world. So maybe, you know, there can be a designated destination and preferred means of communication, because, again, some people are going to want a text or an email or a direct message or, what have you. That I think that belongs there too, potentially.
Yeah. Okay. So we're diving in, which is great. But just on the general structure, is that kind of working for people? And if not, let's add something. If so, then we'll keep it up. And then on the problems that we're trying to address, are there more problems?
When you say research, Terry, what do you mean? I mean, it seems to me in research you've got issues of patient matching. But what is research as a problem?
Yeah, it's sort of the intersection of research and demographics. How much patient detail? Because a lot of research is de-identified, so there is no patient detail, but that's not all research.
So maybe the problem is there's a problem related to de-identification and limited data sets, which affect research particularly.
Terry, I'm for research, but I don't think we can jam that into USD. I don't think it fits unless you craft it differently. What elements do we want?
We're talking about demographics, right? I mean, that's the key point here. So what is it about? And I think what you're saying is not about research on demographics or research into patient matching. I think you're talking about how can demographics as a component of the USCBI support research? What do researchers need in the private, public, pharma sectors, et cetera, to, from demographics? To support their work.
Yes. Thank you, Steve. Well done. All right. So, again, these are just sort of general use cases. Do we have other problems that demographics intersects with that we can think of? Because my thinking is if we know the problems we're trying to address, then we'll be more complete in what we propose for the demographic data class.
Just one comment, and I don't want to nitpick here, but give me a little bit more on the Pop Health Analytics. You've got a social media tag.
I was just thinking wildly, how are we going to reach out to patients? Sort of your point, the emerging technologies, is your social media tag going to be a patient identifier, a personal identifier? I don't know.
When I read even the zip code level so it depends on how we're defining population health, but I think there is a little bit of a overlay with public health reporting in some respects too, if we're thinking populations much more broadly than just patients that have sort of immediately received care, and rather sort of more broadly think. So it just gets a little tricky. I don't know if those two can be combined or if it makes sense. I'll leave it to the group to sort of comment on that. But I would say that, often what you need for public health reporting may also be beneficial for Pop Health Analytics as well.
No. So we ought to at least list the possibility, or I don't know if it's actually starting, of a Medicare medical record number. I've heard that may be happening.
I thought they were very clear about no monies can be appropriated for a national identifier.
Well, it's not national. It's just for Medicare.
Okay,
oh, it's just Medicare.
I think it's cooking, but I don't know if it's still cooking.
Yeah, I remember hearing that there's a change afoot, that people are going to be able to start at least researching it.
Okay, very good. Well, yeah, so that would, you know, that might be a data element under the data class of demographics. And we can, you know, under the proposed data elements up here, you know, we can keep adding anything we want. So Medicare, you know, it may not stay there, but you can put it. Okay, so the structure is okay. We can approach it this way. So do we want to tackle a particular problem or problems? You know, how far do we want to take us today? We got another hour and a quarter. Do you want to blow up any of these?
I think we should go after the provenance a little more.
Well, no, the provenance is next week.
what are we going to do the rest of the time?
And Karen, this is Lauren. I see that Valerie, I don't know if you still have your hand up from the previous question. I don't know if she has something else to chime in.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I can't
no,
see
I'm
it.
Sorry. That's up the last time. I'll take it down. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Hey, this is Matt Ron. Can you hear me? With ONC?
Yeah.
All right, perfect. Yeah. So just wanted to note one thing. The head circumference, that was a typo, and we've fixed that. So just wanted to make sure you were able to remove that from your list.
I appreciate that. And that typo exists in a lot of places.
It
exists. It's all over.
Yeah, if you see it, exists, we did go through and hopefully fixed it everywhere, but if it still exists, please let us know. Sorry about that.
Well, the power of electronic data to self-perpetuate. There we go. Whether it's right or wrong. So, Clem, to your question on provenance, I guess we can, I don't know, depends on how we want to organize things. We could, since we've got time, would it make sense to go ahead and think out some of these broader issues a little bit more?
Well, again, before we leave demographics, I mean, we've thrown out a lot of ideas, but, I mean, shouldn't we... I mean, we're going to be asked to actually make concrete recommendations. So I think as we've been throwing these out, we haven't gotten to the level of, you know, what would be the recommendation and can we agree on it? Is now the time to do that before we move on to provenance?
Yeah, I was just thinking provenance in a general way. But no, you're absolutely right. We have to come back and really flesh this out in the detail to which we are comfortable.
And one thing that's important to remember is this should not be our wish list. We need to actually think about what's feasible to include. The next phase where we're looking at how we get more data elements into the US CDI, I think will be broader. But right now it's kind of like what standards exist to support the data elements that we're proposing, what is already in the 2015 edition certification, whether it's required or required by providers to use or at least required for vendors to have, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, and Christina, I think that, you know, I think you're right. I think that we should focus on the data elements within each data class that have already been, you know, included in this US CDI version 1. And I want to thank Clem for finding and sending the document that you found on the web, because it is a really good document. So I think that we should probably, you know, keep our focus on that and then make a parking lot for each of the data classes to say what else goes there. So like within demographics, we've identified a bunch of stuff that may be needed there in the future. Another one that I don't think we've captured is nickname. You know, that's really important and wasn't in there. And I see they've got suffix in there, but I think most of us, you know, with professions know that suffixes, some people use them for, you know, junior, the third, et cetera, and other people use them for, you know, MD, RN, JD, Esquire. So, I mean, you can't just sort of say suffix without defining which suffix you're talking about. Race and ethnicity, of course, so much has been written about that, and I think there are now accepted standards of, you know, what is a list of standard races, what is a list of standard ethnicities, language. I mean, I think each one of these needs to have pointers that go to what is, you know, so it's not, so you've got the data class, you've got the data element, but then, like, within the data element, you've got to have a list of what's acceptable. And there were some comments earlier about address, you know, in terms of, you know, how componentized is it? Do you have number, street, city, county, country, you know, or is it just a free text address? I think that's the level of detail we probably want to get into, at least on the data elements that have been identified in the draft version one.
So, Stephen, let me come back to that a little bit on. So are you proposing sort of a method in which we want to see a list of the components of name, and we want that list to be standardized, and we want that list to live somewhere where it can be referenced, and a list that someone will curate, no doubt, but sort of like the ISA for the data elements.
I mean, you said name. I think name is a little tricky. So first name, you know, or quote common name. I think that's, you know, that's pretty clear. You know, it's interesting. When I filled out the birth certificates for my kids, you know, I had to decide, well, do they get multiple first names or multiple middle names or multiple last names? You know, and we decided to give them a bunch of middle names so that their first and last names were simpler. But, you know, in some cultures, you've got multiple terms in a first name or multiple terms in a last name, and we have to think about that, right?
Mm-hmm. Some of this stuff, though, has been thought about already and are specified in some of the standards. I don't think that we should be, we don't have the energy or time or persistence to be a standards group. So I think we
Standards exist, we should point to them.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, there are standards for name, and they have those pieces and parts, and they're described better. Now, they may need tweaking, but we can make suggestions, but we can't complete the tweaking. You know, there's last name, middle name, suffix. I think the other issue when you get international is first name and last name aren't the right way to say things. I think it's family name and something like that. There's names that are better generalized, because in Chinese, the first name is the last name. You know, I mean, it's what we call the family name is the first name. So, but I don't, I mean, we can't boil the ocean on these things. I think we should try to find some things that someone should do and do better.
Yeah. So,
let's put them in front of us and then talk about them, you know, what they are now.
Right. So, you know, I don't think we necessarily have to address the stuff that's already in the Common Klingel data set. And hopefully there is a process similar to what you referenced, Stephen, where these lists are constantly updated and become the new standard, but that somebody else is doing all that work. I think where we're going to put our effort will be riffing off address and riffing off phone number and then adding anything else we think.
Yeah. Well, I think we should add something that says which kind.
Which kind of what, Clem? I'm sorry.
Number and maybe even address, you know. They're permanent address or summer address. I don't know what. I'd have to look at, see what other things are doing with that. But, you know, you register for most things, at least the phone number, and there's different kinds. Sure, mobile and the home, you know, the home and office. And
yeah, my let's see if what I did was.
We got to decide which one, but I think that I think they're too vague right now.
Okay, so I have to go. I don't have. All right, so I don't. Didn't have it saved where I could grab immediately. So, but I will. I promise to send that out because I think it answers a lot of our questions about address. As I said, it goes into excruciating detail. So, I think one of the challenges we're going to have with the list of potential addresses or the list of potential anything is, you know, how far down the list do we need to go to get something that's workable?
Terry, one comment I guess I would make, maybe it, hopefully it could be a blanket comment. I think I sort of heard sentiments similar, so I'm just rehashing what I've heard. But for an address, I would say I think we stay with current address, current home address, whatever. But I would say something along the lines of every effort should be taken to use existing standards that ensure a level of consistency in how this is captured and noted. And if there is no standard, that should propel any basically a group to come together and standardize it. So I know that's not perfect, but I think we're not going to boil the ocean here. And to the comments that have been made, there's been a lot of work that's been done to standardize some of these data elements already. So we should just take from that, but I think maybe adding a blanket statement here so that they can get into the depth around name and address, et cetera, I think would be beneficial.
I love the way you said that. You should put that in the chat comments so they can capture it.
Yeah, better than what I'm trying to write down.
If I can remember it, I will do that. No problem.
Also, I will add, you know, since we were talking about riffing off address, that in California and now subsequently within the Sequoia project, we've started a whole discussion about how to standardize the entry of address for people who are homeless. And there again, there are not current standards, but that needs to be considered here.
Yeah.
Or refugees or displaced persons. You know, we need to think about those things.
Sure. The pick a fire in California, right? Okay. So I think on address and phone number, the AHIMA paper will give us some great guidance. So maybe, you know, I think we can, to Cheryl's point, if someone's done the work, let's take it. It's fine with me. So I guess maybe what we want to do is spend some time on what we might think are potential new ones, and then ultimately we may prioritize those in terms of, you know, what's reasonable now, what's coming and might be useful in the future, maybe just binary grouping, things that we might want to put in a fast track and some that we're going to put in a slow track. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, do biometrics count as a demographic?
I say yes.
Yeah, okay. So we need a placeholder, and that's really a future that's coming, right? Personal ID numbers, now some people already have their own direct addresses and certainly their own emails and their own unique identifiers. I don't know how far that's come along, but.
And we haven't gotten into things like driver's license, passport, social security numbers. Right, there's lots of ID numbers that people have, some of them quite common.
But some of them are prohibited too, or at least discouraged for use, like social security. What are they asking for here? What do they want in terms of ID numbers?
Well, you know, so it's just if you had, you know, a patient, so essentially, Clem, did you bring it up, the patient designated destination?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Well, I don't think of that as their ID. It's their personal health record or their LARD or whatever they call it. I expect we're going to have those because the whole purpose of the Cures Act is to deliver everything to the patient.
Yeah, but in a sense, that would be an ID, no?
I don't think it's necessarily the identifier. It may not be connected to the individual. It may simply be, it's like a footlocker that isn't necessarily, it's not necessarily an identifier for that individual.
Well,
email address probably is. But
it has to be linked to all their identifiers, I guess. Maybe that's it. So.
Given an ID won't get it to any particular place that will save the data.
If I remember correctly, and David McCauley's work, which was referenced earlier, will confirm this. I want to say that, and I can't recall if it's Commonwealth or whatever the patient matching effort that involved a number of EMR companies, I think what they have found was driver's license was a key in helping support better patient matching. The gap, obviously, that then exists, though, is pediatrics, but or anyone, you know, not driving. But I think if we take it from the approach that Terry had laid out in terms of what problem does it solve, I do think the driver's license or the ID, I guess, but the license in particular helps support this notion of better patient matching.
Well, I'd like to, in terms of that, I'd like to put up the last four Social Security because lots of companies use it, but it's been sort of kept from view in the ANC rules. We asked for it in the last round. They said no. But that helps break ties. And it doesn't risk identification of the patient. Because that's the part that there's like 10,000, 100,000 people with each last four pattern.
Yeah. So if we
destination, it shouldn't replace or be equivalent to an ID. In the world of direct, I think it's a little bit like an email address, but it's a way to get stuff sent someplace.
So if I could maybe pull things together, so under the problem of patient matching, we would want to add last four of social, right?
Yeah.
I'm just going to drop them down over here. What else would for patient matching would be? We like personal ID.
Keeping all the addresses, I'm told, helps.
All the addresses. Okay. So again, we'll get a list of addresses and we can parse those. Maybe we can do that first next week, when everyone's got a chance to look at it. But if we're going to prioritize things, anyway, we need SMEs, SAIP, but that's different. So if we're going to propose to add new things to this data class.
Well, I think a driver's license or publicly issued ID number.
Okay, so personal ID number.
Yeah, and you don't have to have a type with the number, just could be one field, two fields.
A type, ID number and type.
Right, you know, it's passport, it's this, it's that. But it gets complicated. I think there's stuff, this is dealt with in HL7V2, because you got multiple license number sources, you know, different states, et cetera. I think it would refer to some document that would cover it.
Okay. No, I'm all with you. So again, sort of prioritizing things that we would want to add to this list.
Well, I think class four is easy.
Yeah.
It might be sellable unless it's politically rejected.
Okay. and sort of new elements, maybe it's sort of newer elements short term and new elements long term, future. So for the short term elements that we want, anything else? Medicare ID, that's future.
I still think it may not be short term, but an address for a destination for your record.
Yeah. What sort of address, a real one or a virtual one?
Well, the problem is nothing is totally spread across the world, but you know, the example would be the direct address that some environments have created for the...
All right. So let's put direct address in. All right?
Do we have room for email?
Yeah, email makes sense. I wish
we got room for everything. We have all the room in the world. This is a continually expanding document.
But I thought you were looking for the highest priority.
Well, I'm looking for stuff that's sort of short-term and has potential value, and then long-term, which we assume has potential value, but somebody else is going to figure out. But we're going to need to put a placeholder in. So anyway, suffix and nickname, I think we want to add that under name. And these four things, I guess, are all sort of longer term. Is that fair?
Yeah.
I think so. I think that makes sense. The one thing I would add, and I'm going to throw this out here for comment and thought from the group, but one of the areas that I think has been most important, and it's somewhat kind of an old way of doing this, but a little bit of an aha for patient matching, is some level of verification by the patient, meaning that I have, you know, this info for you. Is this correct? Is this not correct? Verify. So I'm just wondering if that idea, and again, it's sort of still forming in my head a little bit, is there an opportunity here to perhaps add a field that identifies this has been verified by this person, by this patient, whatever it may be. And just that's an idea. We can leave it, but it just sort of occurred to me as we're thinking about the patient matching scenario.
Yeah, you could almost think of it as two-factor identification. So bidirectional.
I think that's an excellent point. And I wonder if that doesn't increase the importance of the preferred method of communication for the patient. Because every time the record is updated, to send an update link acknowledging that the information is correct could be extremely valuable.
Yeah, I would agree.
And I think verified itself has dimensions, right? It's verified by whom and when, at the very least. Because sometimes the patient is a minor or is, you know, otherwise incapable.
Provenance. Yeah.
That's true. That's a good point. And that may be more the provenance, but nonetheless, I think just the idea in essence, I think is we can think about that and see where it best belongs.
As someone who spent a lot of time thinking about adolescent confidentiality, you know, you can have an address that's been verified by the parent and a different one that's been verified by the patient, and they can both be true.
They can both be true. And one shouldn't be shared with the other. So.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and this gets, you know, anyway. Right. So, all right, so for the use case of patient matching, we've come up with these bunch of things that we can work into a suggestion list. On the other, so on public health reporting, again, probably none of these is new compared to what's in patient matching. They just have other data fields. So zip code is one, but your GPS location, you know, is more granular than your zip code. Yeah. So beyond what we've done under patient matching, do you think there's anything that needs to be fleshed out in any of these boxes?
Well, not from a demographics perspective. I can't think of anything further.
You know, thinking about the overlap of demographics and pediatrics, you know, we all think about work addresses as adults, but kids have school addresses, which can be relevant in all sorts of situations like disaster response, so, you know, social determinants.
Interesting. So maybe there's a subset. All right. Okay.
Maybe it's not a work address, it's an alternate address or something like that.
Yeah.
Again, all this might have been worked out by AHIMA already and the HIM people, but be nice. There's an SME we should have come visit us.
Yeah.
It seems logical to add pediatrics as a subset under demographics, especially if we're already looking at pediatrics for vital signs.
Oh, right. And then you have the divorced parents and all of their addresses.
Okay. So let's do a subset, pediatric subset. Okay, so how about if we clean this up a little bit, get it out onto a real Google Doc, and let people add comments.
Sounds good. Sounds great.
All right. So that'll be our homework, to figure out all that. And my homework is to get you the AHIMA paper and the appendices, which I'll send out immediately. So, Lauren, we have... We're doing...
Yeah, we're good on time. I know we're just a little bit ahead of schedule, but if you want to break for public comment, we can do that now and then concede the rest of the time back to you guys.
Sounds good.
And we can start on provenance if we want.
Why don't we do that? Then, Asel, can you bring up the public comment slide? Carrie, you may have to, okay, thanks.
Stop sharing. Yes, I've been.
And then, operator, if we can just open the line for public comment.
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And then are there any task force members that didn't announce themselves at the top of the call? Make sure I captured everyone. Okay, and then operator, do we have anyone in the queue at this time for comments?
Not at this time.
Okay. Then Terry and Christina, I hand it back to you.
Okay. Let me mock up a quick provenance one. So there's nothing in the current common clinical data set on provenance. And ONC is proposing, I'm working on this in the background, guys, so bear with me.
So ONC is proposing author, author timestamp, and author organization.
Okay.
So that's our starting block.
Author.
I suggest we start by fleshing out those three before, you know, and then separately think about additional data.
So it's author, author stamp, and which one?
Author organization.
These are going to be useless unless they're bound down better. The organization, we've got to have like a Medicare code or some darn thing for the organization, and timestamp is bound down, but if someone just types in a name, it doesn't tell you enough about what the test was or where it came from.
Well, let's take them one at a time. You want to start with author?
Well, I think it's a bad, you know, you got lab, so who's the author of a lab test?
Exactly. So the author can be a human being. It can be an institution. It can be you're talking about labs, you know, it can be all the way down to a device within a department, within a location, within an institution. We have to think about that. With documents, you know, they have multiple authors, right? I mean, it may have an attending and a resident and a student. It may have a nurse and a doctor.
I'm assuming, let's go to the lab. You know, there's a technologist, and then there's the signing or the verifying person, and there's maybe the overall authority. But I'm looking at this as to help me know which test is the same as another one that seems similar. And it's just, you know, the same thing. If they don't have a tied down some of this stuff, you won't be able to figure that out.
So Clem, to go back to our, and I'm sorry, I'm having a trouble sharing my screen back again. The problem to be addressed is that, can you articulate what you just did?
I think the problem is that in CDA world, you can get three or four same pieces of information from multiple sources, and you can't sort them out. So it just clogs up the record with a bunch of stuff. And you get the doctor gets, the pharmacy gives you a prescription. The doctor then copies it into his record and sends it on to the next doctor. The labs have the same thing. So I think somewhere we got to know which is the one starting point of a result so you can know which ones to pay attention to.
Okay, that's sort of a generalized issue, right? You don't, so the problem is it's difficult to sort out data from multiple sources.
Well, no, the problem is there's no there's no unique identifier on the data elements, at least in CDA.
Yeah, that's sort of the solution too, but
maybe it's not feasible. So, but if you had some identifiers that were defined in a specific way, at least a human could see which ones were the same results.
I think what we're going to find is that depending on the data element, the notion of author really changes. I mean, think about an immunization. You know, was the author the ordering provider, the administering, you know, clinical staff member?
Well, I think in general, we've got too vague of a space here. And the other use is that you could get back to the person who made it, you know, because you have questions. But we're running into problems in all of it, though.
So this is Cheryl. I was thinking about this differently. It sounds from what I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, that what you're talking about is, you know, basically the collector of the data. And multiple people engage with a patient when they come in for a visit, multiple people are entering data. I don't know what the capabilities are of all the EHR systems as far as being able to discern how that data is collected, whether it aligns to who signed in to, you know, credit it. But I was looking at this from a sending and receiving standpoint, so that from a data provenance perspective, as a payer, I would want to know that this data is coming from, you know, the system at provider XYZ versus the lab versus whatever, not the actual individual who captured the data. Because I think that's a different problem. So I think we need to first identify what problem are we trying to solve here.
Well, again, there's two. I think the two are that to know what's in what. Some a pseudonym, a sort of uniqueness thing to tell whether two things are the same. The second one is to get back to them and ask something about it. Now, it gets complicated because you might know the institution sends you this result, but they send it out to Mayo's to get the test result. So, the last handler of it, you want to know. I mean, these are good, important questions. I think it's going to be a tough problem. You have an answer with thinking of a sender and receiver?
Well, I think we have to try to solve both problems. I think Cheryl's point is really well taken. You know, if you're a payer, you just want to know that this came from Harvard versus Kaiser, you know, and that's very different, you know, than wanting to know whether it was Dr. Smith or Dr. Jones or whether it was the lab director or the tech who drew it, or the provider who ordered it, et cetera.
Exactly. And I do think it's two separate issues. I'm not saying either, you know, we need one versus the other. I think we need both, because then I focus it down the road. What about when all of these hospital systems and payers and others are using machine learning? How do I know what has been analyzed by a person and put in versus what's been generated by a machine? I'm going to want to know that. So how do we identify it? So I do just think for simplicity's sake, we need to make categories and talk about it as far as each category goes rather than all as one topic.
Agree.
Right. And you're, because there are clearly similarities in provenance that no matter who you are, you're going to want to know these three things. You are going to want to know who created it, the author, and we'll, as per Stephen's point, flesh that out a bit. When it was created, where it was created. And then there are going to be some other pieces of information that are going to be important, and it's almost who's handled it in the meantime or when was it changed last, that are going to have value whether you're a payer or a person or a provider. So we may be able to come back to a set of data elements for provenance that meet the use cases of at least those three groups, payer, provider, patient. And who else? I mean, who else are the user groups? It's the same principle. We ought to make sure we're solving.
We mentioned public health and researchers.
Right.
I mean,
right. Researchers and public health.
Well, for billing, it's easy. It's going to be the ones who are sending the bill. And again, in that case, I think it always we should specify an identifier, and one that we should work would be the but you can maybe help me. Is the NPI, the National Provider Identifier? Doesn't every billing institution have to use that?
Yeah, I think you're right, Clem. It's certainly used commonly on the orderer, who's ordering it. It may not be who's, but then who's billing for it is also an NPI, I think.
Well, they do have the organization's NPIs and the providers have NPI, and the individual providers have NPIs.
And sorry to interrupt this, but Lauren, do we need to break? We already broke for public comment. Nothing broke.
Nope, we didn't have any comments. So we just got about 6 minutes here.
Okay, good. Let's keep going. And my apologies, folks. I'm taking notes that you can't see, so they're not anywhere as good as when you're talking. We'll hand them out. A short list.
The only thing I would add to the NPI conversation is that whatever identifier needs to be something that we should acknowledge any other post-acute entity. So I don't know enough, but an NPI is typically a hospital, and there's a provider number, et cetera.
It's not
post-acute as well.
Taxi drivers have them. Anybody who bills to Medicare has to have them.
Okay, perfect. That would be my only thought, is just to kind of make sure that umbrella is large.
But it may not still cover everybody.
Yeah, so just call it an identifier across all settings. Question NPI. So the list of things, besides the three that ONC has listed, can you think of other sort of new data elements, new provenance items that have general utility?
Well, going back to my old saw, I think people have been proposing a unique identifier. I don't know how you can do it, though, from a whole bunch of independent sources, so whether it's can be conceived or not. But if you had a unique identifier, then you could go to some table and find everything else, maybe.
Right. Well, there are provider registries and patient registries. And so in a sense, if you have a registry number, that's sort of a start.
That'll be menu, though, right? Oh, the registries, they take...
Well, then you end up with registries, so... So what else do we... For provenance, what stamp on the data would be useful? Would it be valuable to know who last? Well, I guess whenever data is modified, then it gets, does it then get a new ID? Does it keep its old provenance and now take on a new identification? That
we've certainly heard that you need to have the original ID to tie all the versions together.
Original ID of data, and then you need a supplemental ID every time it gets altered.
I think we need an expert on that.
Yeah, you're right. This is a deep subject.
Needs SME. Okay, we'll get one.
Before we finish, I want to throw in a complication on the time. Remember daylight savings time and the fact that some hours occur twice? That has to be considered.
It's going away. I don't know how many years from now, but it's phased out, phasing out. Right?
And leap minutes and all the rest, too.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Somebody's had to figure that out. Remember 2020?
Remember 2K. Y2K, right.
Y2K.
The lights all went out. Whether we should also think about a simplest first version that would accomplish something.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd be able to take on everything at once.
Absolutely.
It's too simple.
Yeah.
Unless we attach. Now, if we had... we got to figure out who's the one that signs off on stuff for, say, test results and discharge summaries. I guess that's easy. It's going to be the author. Maybe there's a definition for author that's well accepted, you know, who that is in different circumstances.
If we think about senders and receivers, so the sender is going to need to be able to put a stamp on the data that says, puts their brand on it. This came from me, and I'll stand behind it. And a receiver has to know who sent them the stuff.
So,
and then,
if we knew a unique ID for who they called them, these different three different things, it wouldn't be too bad. You know, if they had to use NPI for the institution and NPI for the provider, and then they had a timestamp. But then there's all the definitions of who gets chosen as those things.
So I just want to acknowledge we are at time. So I know we've got, we can continue this discussion. So Terry and Christine, if it's okay, we can maybe pick this up at the top of our next call.
Sure. So our homework will be the HEMA article, these two drafts in a editable format where don't erase anything, but put your comments in next to anything that's there, okay? So it's provenance. Anything in black, leave, but you can add your own color, your own NPI with your initial, so we'll know where it came from.
Great. Thanks, Terry. If anyone has... you know, issues accessing the document, just shoot us an email and we'll make sure you have edit capabilities. Christina, were you going to add something else?
Nope, I think we're good.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank everyone for your time and we'll adjourn today.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.